above the horizontal.
Pushes away from McCulloch. Thurston gets the ball to Morgan. Morgan crosses the 20. Comes away to O'Neill. Gets the ball. And Felder scored. Felder scored in the corner.
Welcome to Above the Horizontal, a podcast about the NRL and specifically tonight, actually, State of Origin. I'm your host, Bo Nicholson. I'm joined tonight by just the one guest. We also do have the Big E, Owen Gibson, giving us his tips for next round, joining us a little bit later on. But before we get to that, we are going to dissect State of Origin Game 1 for the men and a little bit of a reference to Game 2 for the women as well. And I'll particularly like to rub that in because, of course, I am a Queenslander. Not the most parochial one going around, but when we win, it's easy, I suppose. So I like to chirp a little bit, just a tiny bit, which much to the chagrin of Chris Waring, who is from New South Wales. Hello, Chris. How are you on this Wednesday evening?
Yeah, mate. Not too bad. Hasn't been a very successful viewing rugby league experience for me. Not that it ever usually is in club land, but back-to-back L's with New South Wales men's, New South Wales women's, and then West Tigers 56-14 against the Dragons. So, yeah, it hasn't been it's never really happy times, but it's even been even unhappier times.
You know what I should have done? I should have dug up the audio of you at the start of the season in the preseason. You and I both, I think, decided that the Dragons were going to be wooden spooners. And I remember you going to town on the Dragons particularly and then saying that it would probably come back to bite you on the behind in round 14, and wow, did it what?
Yeah, certainly did. And I was one of those things where as soon as I said it, I kind of realized, well, no, this is just going to make me look like a moron in some relatively soon history, and that was demonstrated with the complete annihilation and especially Jacob Little fucking tearing the team to shreds. So, yeah.
Karma is a cruel beast. Let's actually, before we get into the State of Origin, let's talk a little bit about the Tigers. We talked about this off air just briefly that you wanted to mention it. It's getting dire. There's a few things to talk about. So obviously, Stefano, there has been rumours for a while that he wouldn't want to stay once his contract was up, or he might be seeking a release potentially. Apparently the Tigers are going to throw a fair bit of cash at him, $800,000 a year for the next 5 years is the rumored offer. Lachlan Galvin is signed for the next couple of years, so technically he is not on the market. He's an 18-year-old who shows a lot of promise and apparently has asked officially for a release, although there is some contention about whether it came from him directly or if it was been mostly his manager. Either way, hands-off clause has been issued by Shane Richardson. Then you have Benji, you know, in his first year of full-time coaching, you know, very inexperienced. He's been impressive in some ways, but not so much in others. Heading off to Fiji during a bye round was contentious, to say the least. So I guess I want to just, as a Tigers fan, they've had 9 losses in a row now. Like, what are your thoughts on some of those issues and the way that they've been handled so far? Like, for example, Galvin wanting out, but Richardson saying no, Marshall heading off to Fiji. How are you feeling around the club at the moment?
Yeah, it's kind of, it's been gradually developing. And, you know, the West Tigers, they're a club that certain parts of the media, more so News Corp, Fox, love to try to disintegrate until. That's part of it. So there is a hyper focus on the group, but also the club does nothing to benefit themselves. So there's two things at play here. Let's start with the Marshall one. The Marshall one's, there's so much of what he's done that I like so far, and I really like his demeanor. I like what he says. I like his attitude with the players. I'm never really opposed to I think some of it is a little bit overblown, the commitment stuff. I would just say, if optically, the Fiji holiday and then coming back and being completely annihilated when the idea was, oh, it's going to be a refresh, is not great. That is a bad look, especially, of course, up until this week, they have, they've been losing, but it hasn't been horrifically bad. It's more so a skill issue, just the team sucks. But there has been a commitment until the second half, Dragons game, which was just a nightmare beyond belief. So does that, this is all to do with he's a rookie coach. I totally get that. I don't think it's not so bad. I think he has the potential to be a good coach, just from what I listen to and some of the other stuff that they're doing. There's a pretty much clearance fucking sale on the West Tigers top 30 at the moment. So some of which I think is a good idea, but we'll go with that a little bit. Onto the players. The Stefano one is, this isn't Shane Richardson's or Benji Marshall's fault. It's the previous administration's completely fucking ridiculous contract of, the salary kicker if he makes two State of Origin games, well, I think three in total in that contract, but so he needs two more, or the Tigers make the eight. It's just a ridiculous consideration. So they've tried to upgrade him. I don't think the money is too ridiculous given what they project his as and his ceiling as, and given the club situation, I think he's going to go. I don't think he's going to take it. So that's disappointing. And then the Gavin stuff is, I don't even know what to think about that. It's just, he's only 18. I will say the one thing I don't like the Tigers have done, they shouldn't have been playing him with a broken hand. I just don't understand the point. He's 18 years old. He's not a seasoned vet who's accustomed to, the playing with the injuries week in, week out. I get the Tigers injury list is completely ridiculous at the moment. It's everywhere. It's completely decimated. But I just don't agree with, forcing the 18-year-old in his debut season to be the, play every week with broken hand with pain injectors. Has that accelerated the situation? I'm sure to a certain extent. But, yeah, I don't know. It smells of agent fuckery to me.
Yeah. It does to me too.
Yeah, it's just very opportune. I just don't think Gavin, especially there has been some positive stuff, a couple of weeks, a month ago he was, he was at the Magpies game and stuff like that, which makes me think it's, there's some kind of buy-in to the club, and then all of a sudden there's this. So that part I don't know, to be honest, but I really do like Shane Richardson's response. Spoke to Michael Chambers on 100% footy. I thought that was really good. So I think there is a bit of promise in the response to all of this stuff so far, which is obviously the situation is spiraling out of control at a rapid rate, but some of the response has been adequate, I will say.
It's a lot to ask of Tigers fans to be patient, considering the fact that it has been a decade of mostly diabolical results. But you have to put some faith in Richardson's history and the fact that what we've seen so far has been pretty decent operation under his watch. And I think you have to give Benji Marshall a chance to make some mistakes. He's not going to be the perfect coach. Not everyone can manage it. It's very, very, very rare. It took Craig Bellamy four seasons before he started winning a comp, and he had a very good roster when he started at the Storm, and they were a good team, much better than the Tigers. But it's just very rare that a coach just lands on their feet with very little experience and starts killing it. Look at Cameron Seraldo as an example. That's a guy that did a 10-year apprenticeship as an assistant, did a couple of caretaking gigs during that time. Griffin was sacked by the Panthers, and then again when Cleary was unable to coach for a while, he stepped in at two occasions there, did well, got his chance. We all laughed at them last year, said the Bulldogs were fucked, we thought they made the wrong choice, that he looked like shit, he was so promising but now he's not, and the Bulldogs are doing a lot better than we thought they would. And a lot of that has to do with some strategic decisions that have been put in place by their coach and their football management. So Benji needs some time, Richardson needs some time, but is it too much to ask of Tigers fans considering what you've been through?
Yeah, that's the part to deal with. And also the second part to this is I think the club feels more external pressure via media reporting, something that the Bulldogs don't get as much. They still do get, but not as much as the Tigers. Mm. Yeah, Serrato one's a great point, a great example of it was a bit of a tumultuous season last year for them, and similar. I'm hoping to see what I'm hoping for as a fan is You kind of see similar disruptions to the top 30 squad, pretty much like Serrato did. He took a knife to that top 30 and was like, well, you know, if you're not up to the standards here of professionalism, then, you know, F off. So, and that's where he brought in, you know, much maligned now. But I think it's turned out well for them. Like the, you know, the Kurt Mann, Simmons, Drew Hutchison, Connor Tracy, Jake Turpin, all these very solid, you know, they're fringes, you know, some of them are, some of them are legit fringe first graders. Some of them are, you know, quite solid first graders, but just people who are, you know, they're just professionals. And I think you can see that with a lot of the moving on of Jaden Sullivan's going to Hull at the end of the season for all reports. Asuka Poa's gone. Papali'i's gone. You know, there's so many on the way out. Jake Simpkins gone. And yeah, that's what I'm hopeful for. I'm happy to I don't expect them to be a top 18 next year, obviously not, but I just expect them not to be completely fucking hapless like they are now, which is, you know, there's no excuse for losing nine in a row. There just isn't. Especially when, like, this team literally beat the Sharks this year. It's just, like, that's the, one of the confusing parts. It's like, why is it just so, there's some periods of promise and then it just falls to complete shit. I think Tigers fans would accept some consistency, you know, a 40% win team, not a 10-15% win team.
Yeah, I can see that. And there's plenty of teams out there that have been disappointing. Like, I look at the Bulldogs as an example. They haven't played finals for a long time. The Cowboys, they had that great season a couple of years ago, which is starting to look like a flash in the pan. But the Cowboys have got a much better roster than both the Bulldogs and the Tigers, and they're also struggling. So there's plenty of coaches that should be under pressure. We talked about this off air, the idea that it seems like, you know, you have Buzz Rothfield being like, oh, I'd give Benji till the end of the year, and then, you know, 10 weeks into next year if they're not winning games, you know, and that's a terrible Buzz Rothfield impression, but it's the idea. Thank you for stifling your laughter there. Jeez. The point being, though, that, you know, realistically, Todd Payton had his shit season last year. Why isn't his head on the chopping block? Why isn't Adam O'Brien in some trouble? Why isn't, I suppose they did pretty well last year for a part of the year at least. Yeah, like, why aren't we hearing the same noise about other clubs? I guess it's a bit disappointing. Let's move on to State of Origin, because that's what everyone is talking about. We, of course, didn't have an episode last week because Miles, I can confirm to you, Chris, is alive, at least. He was last Wednesday. I saw him in the flesh, which is, is that a good thing that he's alive? Or
we'll let the audience decide that.
Fair enough. You know, like, so me and Kieran took him to the Brunswick Hotel in the Valley in Brisbane, which was a quiet night with some very not very clever punters around us that were just saying the dumbest shit. It annoys me. I'd rather watch it at home, but whatever. It was nice to see Miles and Kieran, of course. We watched the game together. It was a very controversial one. Queensland, of course, won fairly comfortably in the end. But I think it would be remiss of us to say that I wouldn't have said that Queensland dominated. The scoreline looks like it, but I don't think Queensland dominated. I think there was a couple of factors. Obviously, Swali'i being sent off in the 7th minute. Everyone's talked about that. Everyone's got an opinion on that. It obviously changed the game dramatically. The game was 6-0 at that point. And apart from that, I would just say that Queensland took their chances a lot better than New South Wales did. I think the only missed opportunity for Queensland was directly on that same play as the send-off. Hamaso should have passed to Dearden for a try instead of hogging the ball. Aside from that, they didn't bomb any tries. New South Wales had lots of chances and couldn't take them. That's my impression of it. I think it was a closer game than it showed. What do you think?
It's just a bit of a, it's one of those games where it's kind of unsure what, how much you should take. The Swelly, obviously, send off, which I think is justified. I think some of the debate around that is a little bit silly. In the heat of the moment, I fully had to get people not making, you know, the, you know, their decision's going to be altered due to that. But It's bad hit. Never really lowered. Yes, Walsh slipped, but Sulley's initial target was so high that if, you know, any slight thing other than standing up was going to be dangerous. So, so much of it is just an odd game. New South Wales, I do think it's close, but I think part of that is because I don't think Queensland played that well. There were moments of the game where Queensland, you know, just execution-wise or, you know, some lapse of concentration wasn't great, but they kind of were able to mask it with New South Wales only having 12 in the field. So, yeah, and then some of the rotations is weird. Jake Jovovich just barely playing despite being captain was odd. Nick Ahmed's kicking game was so shithouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's like one of the more interesting takeaways. I don't think, just, you know, with trying to be as neutral as possible, I just don't think it was very promising for New South Wales. There were moments of the game. So, like, individually, like Spencer Lenu, I think, showed that it's a good arena for him.
Agreed, yeah.
Very impactful off the bench. Just seems to be that type of player. Zach Lomax, I thought, was good on debut as well. He was one we probably got at, you know, unsure about personality otherwise, but I think he really was locked in and played well. Brian To'o continued to impress. I didn't think James Tedesco wasn't too bad, all things considering. But, yeah, the King game, the organization in the attacking 20 was just horrific. And that can only be put down to the halfback, I would assume. I think Jerome Luai was okay. But, yeah, I mean, yes, sorry. And then with Reece, like, all considered is, like, Queensland had their fullback taken out. Mm-hmm. Yes, they have a pretty handy fucking backup with Hemiso, but it's still not. They weren't planning for that. You know, you don't expect your player to get wiped out in 7 minutes, so. Even with some of Queensland's clunkiness in attack, I think that should be considered in light of, you know, they had a player literally taken out. So I think it's pretty grim, to be honest, as a New South Wales fan.
Yeah. There were some things that New South Wales did better than Queensland. I think we could agree that through the middle for a large part of that game, I think New South Wales were better. Just looking at run meters alone, only 6 forwards made more than 100 meters, basically all backline players did, but only 6 forwards, 2 of them were Queenslanders, Lindsay Collins and Patrick Carrigan. New South Wales had 4, Haas, Lenu, like you mentioned, Yeo and Angus Crichton. Throw in the fact that I thought Liam Martin was pretty intense in defense at times. I noticed that he, of course, missed a tackle towards the end on Ben Hunt, which was a pretty bad miss, but I think he was gassed by that point. I don't know. Like, I think New South Wales were better in the forward pack. I think the halves were a key difference. I think they were always going to be, though. My pre-game prediction was that DCE would be player of the match. And honestly, watching the game live, I was just like, no, it's probably not going to be. And then they gave it to him anyway. I'm like, oh, sweet. Oh, awesome. Okay, I'll take that correct prediction, even though I was about to bail on it. No, but I thought he would be the difference, because exactly what you're talking about, it's that lack of direction that Nicho Hynes seemed to give. And you think back to some key moments. I think Nicho had 2 good moments, like 2 genuinely good moments. One was straightening up at the line, inside pass to Lenu, and Lenu scores for all money, if not from a pretty good try saver from Hamaso. And the second kick for Zach Lomax, it was a fucked up kick from Luai, and Hynes gets it, puts it on a spot for Lomax, and Lomax is not getting out jumped with that sort of momentum. So 2 good moments from Hynes, but you think back to Queensland's first try, which was of course Ben Hunt backing up DCE from dummy half in a weird kind of role reversal for those two in this game, and that all came from a 7 tackle set, because 10 meters out on the left-hand side, for some reason, Nicho Hynes decided to kick it to nobody under the post with his left foot, which is something that he like never does. It was like a pressure play, run it and get tackled on the last, or grubber it in the direction you're going, or pass it to Luai or something. But kicking it off your left when nobody's aware of the play There was like five Queenslanders shepherding it over the dead ball line, and then they just marched it upfield and scored. And the game was changed at that point because I could see that New South Wales were unable to penetrate. They had all the early running for that first 5 minutes or so, all the ball, all the field position, and they didn't look like cracking them, kicked the ball dead, and then Queensland get one shot and they fucking score. That was a bad sign. So I agree with you. I think Nico was a big problem. Is it as simple as making the switch, do you think, to Mitch Moses? That's the obvious one.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, I agree with the concept of sticking with a half or a series, but then, say, Mitchell Moses for a game and a half, I actually thought he wasn't great in the latter half of that Bulldogs game. I think the Eels kind of lost control of that a bit. But I just think we lack attacking flair in some organization and a louder voice, and Mitchell Moses is definitely someone to yell at his players and abuse them to get into place. So I think you need that in a, you know, context like Origin, where you're playing with, you know, players that aren't your week to week players. So that, you know, some of their personal relationship isn't there. So like a stronger commanding voice. And I think Luai is a good fitting hand for that given the injury situation at the moment. So yeah, I think Nico Hines is slightly overrated, but in terms of clubland, but yeah, just watching it was frustrating. It just seemed to lack any kind of greater direction. And I try to qualify that with, well, we had 12 players and the players are going to be more gassed and maybe less respondent and so on. But still, there were moments of the game, like you've touched on, that, you know, were there. And I think some of it was hampered by just some general, piloting around the ground from the halfback, and some of the kick choices were poor. And I think it's a must-win game. So, yeah, I'd roll the dice at Mitchell Moses. I also think that Mitchell Moses would be the more longer-term view and it's like more consistent role in the halves at the moment. You would think at full strength it would be Cleary Moses. So, I would go with Mitchell Moses.
Let me throw some other options at you here. We know that Swalee is now going to be suspended for, I think it was 4 matches I read. So that definitely rules him out for Origin 2. That means that they need a center. It's either right center as a straight swap for Swalee, or they leave Crichton on the right as he moved there in about the 25th minute during Origin 1. And they find a new left center. Matt Burton was the 18th player. So he's obviously an option. He has played left center before. You also have, of course, Latrell Mitchell, who, if not for Trbojevic being outrageous in 2021, would have been player of the series from left center. He was outstanding that year. I suppose there probably are some other options, but I don't. The cupboard feels kind of bare in the centers. You could go for the right center instead and go with like Katoni Staggs. You could go with Jesse Ramian has been having his name thrown around a little bit. Is it time to pull the trigger on Trell Mitt?
I do have some rugby league nostalgia with like the West Tigers in the 3 seconds they were good in their history, but not really. The only real nostalgia I have for the Blues is literally the 2021 Tom Trbojevic Latrell Mitchell series. That was probably like the most I've ever enjoyed Origin. That shit was insane. So it is like a point where I was like, let's bring that back. But then I'm like, well, can Latrell Mitchell still do that? I don't know. I want to say yes, like, but my heart tells me yes, because I just think he has that within him. I just think he has that mongrel and the, you know, just a bit of the, like, the unhinged passion within him, which I think is good, but there's just been so much talk around it. Like, he's, you know, he's his type player this year. He was really good last week in the round that's gone. He was excellent. But, you know, he's been down in form. So I don't know, to be honest. I would have either Burton or Mitchell. I don't know, to be honest. I did read that. I think Madge was kind of off Mitchell because he kind of brushed him with some kind of some shit like that. I'm not fully aware of the detail, but I'm 50-50. Hey, I wouldn't know who I would choose between Mitchell or Burton.
I tell you who Valentine Holmes would choose. He would choose Burton. You reckon?
Yeah.
And that's
for sure.
And,
yeah.
And that's maybe where my brain goes. If I'm a New South Wales selector, I sit there and I go, right, if there's a personality clash with Madge over some bullshit meeting, fix it. I don't know. Like, manage the man, because that's, I mean, that's what a coach does, right? They manage personalities. Valentine Holmes does not, in his current form, absolutely categorically does not want to be marking Latrell Mitchell. He'd much rather mark Matt Burton, who he would feel pretty confident knowing what he's going to deliver, what he's capable of. He's a fine player, but Trell Mitt is just something else. It's just like, when he's on, there's no defending him, really. I'd be unleashing him. What about Cameron Murray coming back via the bench? Is he an automatic selection at this point, Cameron Murray?
I would just say at first, I think you've convinced me, so I would go to Trell Mitchell.
Yes, thank you.
I would. I still think Hudson Young's an Origin player, but that'd probably be a swap there. Or maybe McInnes out. I wasn't too impressed with that. And maybe, like, you know, I would love like a Connor Watson on the bench. I just don't think it's happening. I'll bring you back in. I think he's just a little bit of a more seasoned head. And then I don't think he adds too great to like the lack of attacking flair. He's solid, but I'd have him back in with Mitchell. Yeah, I'd go for those two.
And the other big contentious one that I can think of is fullback. So obviously Dylan Edwards was initially selected. It was like a passing of the torch to the new generation of fullback for New South Wales. This is the big moment. Teddy was not the captain anymore. It's been given to 29-minute legend Jake Trbojevic. And then, of course, he gets injured. One of the very few times in his career he's been injured. And he is unable to make his debut. Tedesco comes in, and it's more of the same from Teddy. It's high effort, a pretty good first half, I thought, despite the scoreline, and maybe a few too many moments where I think you can attribute, obviously, a lot, and you have a lot of the blame to Nicho Hynes for the ineptitude of the New South Wales attack. Let's remember they scored both of their tries from kicks. So, you know, obviously they're not doing a lot in the opposition 20, and they had a lot of ball there. But you can attribute that to Hynes. You can probably attribute it to Robson. You can probably attribute it to Luai. But Tedesco has to take some of that too. Is Edwards coming straight back in? He is playing this week.
Yeah, I think he is. I just don't think he'd make that decision and immediately go back. Again, Tedesco was, I'd overall say, solid. Like you said, second half, not as ideal. I think it reflected more of where his career's at. I think, like, he's still a very good player. Some people just go too far in the criticism. But, and also, I just want to highlight, this is my chance to get in my soapbox here. Gordon Tallis's take around, like, oh, like, geez, wouldn't it be awkward? It was, had to be one of the, like, most idiotic takes of, and he's probably on the podium for all three, but of the pre-Origin period. Like, it's a professional fucking environment. Like, yeah, he's the second best fullback in New South Wales still, so just go to him. But yeah, I'd pick Edwards. I think just some of the stronger in yardage, just younger legs. I think it would make sense. You selected him first. I don't think Tedesco was respectable, but I don't think he shut Edwards out. So if you selected Edwards first, I think you would go back to that.
And New South Wales, just to finish on this, as an overall philosophy, they have chosen in game one an overall defensively minded team. And Queensland showed, even before the send off, that they were, I mean, like, let's remember they marched upfield, scored that try. And if Hamaso passes that ball on that illegal play to Tommy Dearden, they score a second try within 7 minutes. So that's 13 on 13 at that point. So the defense didn't quite work the way New South Wales hoped it would. And then, of course, with 12 men, it was even more difficult. Do they stay with the same philosophy? And, like, question A is, do you think Madge stays with the same philosophy? And question B would be, would you? Because I know that you're not the biggest Reece Robson fan of the group, but I mean, he made 50 tackles. You know, he did his work. That's what he was picked to do. Cameron McInnes made 41 with zero misses. Trbojevic made 26 in 29 minutes with zero misses. Payne Haas made 42 with one miss. So, you know, you've got a lot. Yeo with 30 with one miss as well. You've got a lot of guys that essentially did their jobs, but they still weren't able to stop Queensland on those edges particularly. Is that a philosophy that Madge stays with, and would you do the same?
Yeah, the famous bloke man of the match, Reece Robson.
Phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal.
absolutely phenomenal.
Where's my...
Phenomenal.
That's it. Phenomenal.
my thing is, I'll start with what I think first, and then I'll go to Madge, because obviously that's what's more important, is what I think, as opposed to the coach in New South Wales.
Definitely,
but,
yeah. Thank you.
cheers. I think with Hines, Coruscant would have made more sense as a bit more spark at a nine. I will say something that is a very recent point is Coruscant's still very solid defensively, but he's not like the crusher of, you know, a lot of the traditional nines. His first contact is cannot be like solid. He's more like a, you know, like hangs on and waits for like a second defender, like a prop to come in with a big impact. Robson is a defensive menace. I'm very happy to admit that. Mm-hmm. So I think Robson makes more sense with someone like Mitchell Moses, who has a little bit more of a clear direction. And Robson's pretty much is like early service. You know, he's good service, good passer, early service, get the ball out. If there's no markers, scoot and then just tackle. So I'm fine with that. He's pretty much perfect for that role. And a lot of it's qualified with, well, how would the defensive metrics still look with 13 on the field as opposed to 12 for the whole game? So I think with Moses, I'm happy to stick with that defense first mentality and keep Robson there. I think he was solid. He had the game you'd expect. He wasn't phenomenal. He wasn't outstanding, but he, you know, I pretty much could have predicted Reece Robson would have that exact game.
He had two great defensive plays too. One to save a try on Nane, knocking the ball out of his hands over the line. And the other one was immediately after Liam Martin leveled Jermaine Hopgood. Reece Robson, excellent line speed, smashed Ruben Cotter, and they got the turnover. And I think the score was still 20-10 at that point, maybe 26-10, but the game was still very alive then. I thought he did a really great job in that way. But you're right. It was like a 7.5 out of 10, what you would expect from an Origin player.
Yeah. And like that's why I think if, you know, if theoretically Cleary and Moses were the choice, I'd probably pick Robson over Coruscant, just in terms of defensive steel. Again, Appy's fallen off a little bit in his defense, still very good. But I'm happy to stick by that. I think Madge was sick by that as well. I don't think some of the personnel might change, but I don't think the philosophy, I don't think it's going to throw that away after one game where New South Wales were in it for a lot of it and we had 12 people. So they were in it for a lot of it. So
I'll let you have it because it's a state. They represent you. Yeah. So it's fair enough.
Yeah, true. Cheers. Yeah, us. Yeah. So I don't think it'll change that. I think that, you know, Robson will stay the same. Those forwards will still be there. I think that's going to be like the, you know, he's going to stick by that and just hopefully no
person
gets sent off this time.
I get to use the person edit again. That's fun. I always look forward to that. On Queensland's side of the fence, obviously Reece Walsh, I don't think will play any football until the next team is picked. So I imagine he'll be picked in the squad and they'll assess him based on whatever protocol he needs to face. What I've heard from various reports is that he's doing quite well, but concussion can be a strange beast and it can show up in different ways. But Queensland will take some confidence in the fact that they have Hamaso with that kind of confidence. Selwyn Cobbo can slot into left center, and if they really, really want, they can get someone like a Dane Gagai or something in that 17 spot if they want some coverage. Or maybe they put Dane Gagai at right center and Val on the left and keep Cobbo on the bench. I'm not really sure, but they've got options, Queensland. I don't think that's very controversial. I think the rest of their players all did, as you described Reece Robson, pretty solid. You know, I don't think anyone would really let themselves down. Val Holmes was probably one of the weaker ones with a couple of errors, but he still ran hard, 150 meters from him. You know, Ruben Cotter, not his best game. Sua was okay. Nane made a lot of tackles, but not much of an attack. Hopgood didn't get much of a chance, really. So I don't know. I'd probably keep the same team, really. And if Walsh is unavailable, you just find someone to slot into that 17 position. And Cobbo starts, presumably, in that situation. So not much changes for Queensland. That's the luxury of obviously winning the last two series, but also winning the first game. They've got a lot of stability, which is an enviable position, I suppose, from the Blues. Speaking very briefly about the Women's State of Origin, which I watched on Thursday, it was New South Wales dominated. They absolutely dominated the first game as well, but they went on to win that one fairly comfortably. The second game, I thought they were the far better team, but they just didn't have the icing on the cake. And one of my favorite players in the NRLW is Taron Aiken, who plays 5'8", of course, for the Roosters these days, and plays 5'8" for the Maroons. And she did her pretty typical show and go. She usually does it in the left-hand corridor, but she was doing it through, like, running across field, ran past a couple of defenders, big right foot step through a gap next to the posts. That made it 8-10. A kick made it 10-10. And then Lauren Brown from 25 meters out in very difficult conditions with all that rain in Newcastle slots over a pretty ugly field goal, but very effective. 11-10 the result. So they go to a decider in Townsville. And it was one of those games where the forwards were the clear MVPs of that game. Shannon Marto got player of the match. And I think that was well-deserved, the Queensland front rower. So a couple of good nights for Queensland, but definitely a couple of nights where New South Wales, I think, can take a lot of positives, but it will be hard to win that game up in Townsville. Let's have a short little break. We'll hear from the Big E, and then we'll come back and we'll do our tips for round 15.
So, boys, this is the Big E. I am going to do my Big E binomial tip of the... Sorry. This is the Big E. I am going to do my Big E binomial tip of the week. My first Big E binomial tip of the week, I am going to tip the Sharks, tipping the Cowboys, tipping the Broncos, and actually I'm going to tip the Titans, tipping the Melbourne Storms, tipping the Roosters, and I'm also going to tip Manly Seagulls and tipping for Newcastle Knights for my boy Friendly. And of course, quickly reminder for tomorrow, happy birthday to the Big F for tomorrow. And also, yes, good luck for my boy Cody Simpson for swimming, and also for me for the Big E, baby. Also, I am going to see and watch the second State of Origin in Melbourne with my big brother and my parents, mom and dad. That is a Big E. And also, knock knock, who's there? Big E, Big E who, Big E out. Hood.
Welcome back to Above the Horizontal. Big thanks to the Big E for his phenomenal tip of the week. He also sent me a separate voice message after that one saying that his wildcard award was a congratulations to the Bulldogs for their win over the Eels, which I second, by the way. That was a pretty gutsy win to be 18-10 down with about 10 minutes left and someone in the sin bin, and to score two tries at the end to win was pretty impressive. So well done to them. And his bold prediction was that Jeremiah Nane was going to score a try this week. So I hope you're right, Big E, and I hope it leads to a Cowboys victory. Chris, let's do our tips for... We'll go game by game this time. Start on Thursday with the Sharks and the Dolphins. Nico Hines returns. Braden Trindle stays in the team because he was pretty outstanding against the Broncos the other night. And the Dolphins have their Origin stars returning and Cody Nikorima at 5'8". So it's first versus fourth. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I like the Cronulla Sharks. Yeah, Braden Trindle was great. I think it's a good idea to stuck by him there. Just got to pick on stronger form, more pretty much. I think they're a stronger team as well. I think it'll be a close game though. Dolphins are one of those teams where you just think they're going to start losing, but they just haven't yet. They're still top four. So, I'll go Sharks by relatively close margin. And also, just want to shout out best wishes to Tom Flegler. Hopefully he's back on the field at some point. Kind of some concerning news around his career. That'd be devastating if that happened. So hopefully we can see him, you know, hopefully good to go by the start of next year.
Yeah, nerve damage. It's one of those things where, you know, it might just be a burner that you shake off and 5 minutes later you're fine. Or it might be Simon Dwyer, like levels of career-ending injury. And hopefully Flegler is, I mean, he's obviously somewhere on that spectrum. And hopefully it's more towards the burner side, even though at this point it's been most of the year, hasn't it? So, yeah, special wishes to him. And oh, I forgot to agree with the Big E. It's Friendy's birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday, Friendy. Sorry. Cheers, boys. Cheers. Let's go to the Raiders and Cowboys. That's from Canberra. Not a lot of changes there. Predictably, of course, with a Todd Payton team. They had made some changes in their forward pack. You know, Tamalolo coming off the bench. They had Griffin Neame starting. And they've decided to ditch that. They've gone with Griffin Neame back to the bench, Michele back to the bench, Tamalolo starting at 13. Oh, dear. Hopefully going back to the future works. I am not confident. The Raiders have been pretty good, and they're playing at home on a Friday evening, which will be cold. They're coming fifth at the moment. Who do you think is going to win this one?
I can't tip the gap. Oh, I don't know, actually.
Scott Drinkwater, bomb catching and tackle efficiency legend, is playing. So
he is so frustrating. He just draws my eye so much. I just hate the way he plays. It's just like he'll do this awesome thing in attack, and then like a forward will make a break, and he'll just like have like the softest tackle attempt in history. Like even if the guy's most likely going to score, I don't like watching him play because of that. But I acknowledge his attacking flair. But if he was on the Tigers, I would fucking lose my mind about some of the stuff he does. I'm going to go on that point. I'm going to go the Raiders. I think so. I'm going to account for the camera being cold as fuck. And I tell you what's like just so unexpected, how good Kale Weeks and Ethan Strange are as a Haas pairing. I just didn't expect it. When I first saw Weeks at halfback, I was like, what the fuck is this? They've been so good.
Yeah. He's quick.
Yeah.
Like, quick.
Yeah.
Proper quick.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I think that's what, yeah. But, and so Ethan Strange, they're both rapid. I think that's what gets a lot of teams anxious about him, because they just, you know, credit to Ricky Stewart and the coaching staff there. And coincide that with like a real tough kind of seasoned forward pack with young backs. It's a good team. I like them. I like watching them. So I'm going to go to Raiders.
I agree that that's the smart pick. I will go for the Cowboys with my heart, but the Raiders are definitely the smart pick there. The next game is the Rabbitohs versus the Broncos. That's the 16th place Rabbitohs and the, I think, 8th place Broncos, if memory serves. So Katoni Sayers comes back for the Broncos. That's pretty cool. And Xavier Willison is back also for the Rabbitohs. Cameron Murray, as I mentioned earlier, is back. He's coming back through the bench, though, with Kalomatangi staying at lock. I think Kalomatangi has been quite good at lock. I think he's a very good edge player. I was confused why he wasn't on the edge when they had Jai Arrow on the edge. But it's starting to make some sense. He's looking pretty good there. I don't think he stays there when Cameron Murray's back in the starting spot, but I think he's looked good. I think Cody Walker and Jack Whiten have looked good as a combination. They've just been very attack-focused, but you know, it seems to be working at the moment. So I'm torn on this one. What do you think?
I am going to go the Rabbitohs.
Mm.
Broncos have just been too inconsistent for mine, some injuries. I really like Whiten and Walker as a halves pairing. I just can't believe it took this long for them to try that instead of rolling out a new AI-generated halfback every couple of weeks. So, no offense to all those who play halfback there, but
Dean Hawkins,
Dean Hawkins, AI legend. And Latrell Mitchell was so good last week. So I'm just hoping that, you know, that trio alongside some, you know, Cam Murray's back, some seniority in the team. Yeah, I'm going to go to Rabbitohs.
I think I'm going to go with you on this one. I'm just texting Meta AI. Hang on. I want to see what their tips are for the weekend. So it's thinking. It's thinking. Okay, here we go.
This is great podcasting.
It started with something and it just went, sorry, I can't help you with this request right now. What? You prick. Anyway, the next game is the Tigers and Titans from Saturday afternoon at Leichhardt. There's a whole bunch of changes, including Appy playing at halfback, Aiden Caesar's back at 5'8". Lobby, the great man who needs a map when he's defending, is on the wing. there's some stuff going on. Fanua Pole on the edge could be interesting, with Fainu on the other edge. That could be fun. Might be something there. Maybe better than Alex Seyfarth. For the Titans, headbutt legend, yep. Seyfarth. The Titans have gone with Jaden Campbell at 5'8", just sort of placeholding for once-in-a-generation player Carter Gordon, if Miles Stedman is to be believed about his talent. Are you heading down to the game, and who are you going for?
Not at this point. Maybe I should, though, since the last time I was fucking at the game, we won, and... I was telling people we were back, and next minute, fucking two people, one out, fucking half the squad's gone. Coach is in Fiji. Fucking hell, Brent Naden back in the centres. That's the level of misery at the West Tigers is Benji Marshall's tried to get rid of this guy, put him on the bench, and he just can't because of the massive injuries. So, this may be like the oldest halves pairing in the NRL as well. Fucking Aiden Caesar is almost dust in Coruscant, so anyway. I don't even know what to say. Yeah, Polo might be interesting on the edge. I kind of see potential there, but fucking hell. Yeah, who knows, to be honest. And Tigers legend Solomon Fatape is back on the bench, so interesting to know. Adam Dewey is not far away from returning. I think he's going to play reserve grade this week, despite being named on the extended bench, so... Anyway, that Leichhardt Oval, might be the last ever game there, FYI. So I might head down for that reason.
Is it really going to be the last ever game? Far out.
There's some, you know, it's up in the air around the future there. They got funding, but I don't know if they'll commit to it. It might be like one game a year or something. But anyway, how the fuck are the Tigers $2.35 on Sportsbet to win this game? Like,
that is not responsible gambling. That is not responsible.
Why are the odds so short? Okay, anyway. I'll go to Titans.
I'll go to Tigers. Whatever.
Oh, cheers.
Yeah. I like both of these teams. I guess not.
It's like fucking...
It's a bit of a kiss of death.
Yeah, it's like 15th. What is it, like 15th and 17th? I like the look of these two teams.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that's probably a bit of an indictment on my taste. Anyway, next game is a couple of teams I also like, the Warriors and the Storm. This is from Go Media Stadium. I love saying that. Sean Johnson's back. That's interesting because I think Tamari Martin was going absolutely shit at 5'8 when Johnson was there. And as soon as Johnson was gone, he started playing halfback really well. Completely decimated the Cowboys on the weekend. That was fun. So anyway, he's back. I think you're going to bring Sean Johnson back, and Tamari's playing well enough that maybe he plays well at 5'8 now. Who you got in this game over in New Zealand, Warriors or the Storm?
It's a tough one. I am going to go the... Oh, man, this is a tough one. Who should I... I'm going to go the Warriors. Obviously, you had, like you just touched on, you got to bring Sean Johnson back, but their halves were good. Martin and Harris Tavita.
The benches are wildly different. If you look at the Warriors bench, it's got Chanel Harris Tavita, Dylan Walker, Jazz Tavunga, and Kurt Capewell. So I guess your middle rotation is Jazz Tavunga and Dylan Walker in that environment. So that's big minutes for guys like Tohu Harris, Adam Fanua-Blake. The Storm, on the other hand, have two proper props on the bench, Christian Welch and Nelson. As Blocker calls him, Nelson, a sopper.
Yeah, I'll stick with the Warriors, but no, it's a flick of a coin.
I will go the Storm, just the amount of class they've got in their team. Okay, let's go to the Eels and Roosters at CommBank Stadium. Fair few changes in the teams. The Eels, I think, have looked better since having Moses and Gutherson return until, like, shooting the bet against the Bulldogs at the end there. Roosters, geez, they've got a good team. Like, just, they dropped Brandon Smith. That's been an interesting little sub-storyline that has surprised absolutely nobody. So that's been fun. I like that. Connor Watson gets a chance at number 9, and Sandon Smith has looked pretty good in that 14 role previously. So I think that's probably actually quite a good move for the Roosters, to be honest. It gives Connor Watson a chance to audition for that 14 jersey that you like him for. Who do you like in this game?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week for the Roosters, and this is a good time to introduce our next guest to discuss his breach notice, Brandon Smith.
He's doing the podcast round, so here he is.
Yeah, he was told to keep his head down, and 3 seconds later, he was on the fucking the Jam and Cheese podcast. he'll be at the Roosters soon. He'll be at the Tigers on $1.7 million. So, it's hard to go past the Roosters. Just on talent alone.
Next game is on Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. It's the Seagulls and Dragons from Brookvale. Seagulls, of course, do welcome back Ola Kawatu. And, Dragons, of course, as you mentioned earlier, decimated the Tigers. The Seagulls held their gloves up against the Panthers until losing. So who do you like in this one?
I don't know. Mainly a very hot and cold. Luke Brooks' brain explosion last week, giving the try away, trying to fight Jerome Luai.
Tigers legend.
The Dragons seem like the type to win by 50 and then just, like, lose their heads the next week and lose. So I'm going to go exactly that. I'm going to go Manly, I think.
Manly have been that team as well, but instead of putting, 50 on some, Tigers-like, poor team.
Cheers.
They've been... Cheers. They'll rock up, they'll beat the Panthers, which they did earlier in the season, and then, like, lose against one of those poor teams the next round.
Yeah.
So on the rationale that they lost last week and the Dragons won comfortably, I'm with you. I'm going to go to Seagulls as well, which sounds counterintuitive, but it makes sense to us. And the last game is at 4:05 p.m. This is also an Origin audition for Bradman Best. We forgot about him. Left center. He's coming back this week against the Panthers. Dylan Edwards comes back for the Panthers. Another Origin audition. So a couple of those going on. The Knights have been pretty good, and they threw a lot of football at the Storm, but the Storm just had a little bit more last week, and the Panthers prevailed against the Seagulls. Who do you like in this one?
Look, it's hard. We forgot to discuss the request release of Armstrong, breaking news in the game. I want Newcastle to win only to avoid another completely insufferable press conference by Adam O'Brien, and also might ruin friends. It'll make friends' birthday weekend a bit better. Happy birthday, friendy.
Happy birthday, friendy, yeah.
But I don't see that happening, to be honest. Yeah, the halves, there's been a bit of, it's kind of interesting, the shifting narrative on Jackson Hastings as once outcast and shortly beloved again, but now seemingly outcast again. I think he's getting on the nerves of a lot of people, gets in a lot of scuffles, and I'm going to go the Panthers. I think this might be a bit of a touch-up, to be honest.
I'm going to go for the Panthers as well. Might be a touch-up, but I hope it's a close one. For Friendy's sake, for his birthday, of course. Happy birthday, Friendy.
Cheers, Friendy. Cheers.
All right, that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for joining me. Thank you to the Big E, of course. Thank you to Miles Stebbins for staying away, as always. Thank you to Kieran Gibson, who was a little bit under the weather. And thank you to Daniel Friend, who is at a Hungry Jack's birthday party right now for his nephew. So happy birthday to you, Friendy. He said it was for his nephew, but it is his birthday tomorrow. So it's a suspicious timing, I think.
Yeah, I think he could have just admitted to it. He was having a Hungry Jack's birthday party.
I'm jealous, to be honest. Hopefully he is having it for his birthday with his friends, like listening to the pod legend Lawrence Leggy, Panthers fan.
This week
is the Friend Leggy Cup.
I actually think that's where Miles is. I think Miles is at friend's Hungry Jack's birthday party.
He may well be. We only see him in real life, never on the pod. And hopefully he's wearing a beanie because it's a little bit cold in Friendly's part of the world. And it is, of course, Beanie for Brain Cancer round, this awareness, you know, week this week. So we see lots of beanies out and about. So hopefully Miles is wearing his most fashionable beanie at Friendly's Hungry Jack's birthday party. Chris, thank you very much for joining me. Hope you have a nice weekend at Leichhardt and hopefully the Tigers get a win.
Yeah, I'll still see if I want to ruin my weekend by doing that. But hopefully a victory would be nice to try to get us out of the headlines a little bit.
It would be nice. And thank you to the audience for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and all that good stuff because it helps us a lot. Leave a 5-star review, tell a friend about us, and tune in next time to go above the horizontal again. But until then, Above the Horizontal is a rugby league podcast by the fans and for the fans. It's produced by our entire team of former writers for Real Sport, including Daniel Friend, Christopher Waring, Miles Steppen, Kieran Gibson, and me, Bo Nicholson. We'd love it if you could support us by telling a rugby league fan about us so they can go above the horizontal as well. Thanks for listening. See you next time.